Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning, Florida Sunday morning, Mississippi Sunday morning. This is our world. We're trying to make it work for us here along the Gulf Coast. So John in Irvington sends me a couple of pictures of very beautiful, some of my favorite peppers, ahis, AJIs, two very nice ones, ahi mango and ahi amarillo. Amarillo? You know what I'm saying. They're in one-gallon pots. He wants to know if you can put them in the ground. John, don't put them in the ground yet. Yeah, they probably are a little pot-bound. You're going to have to manage them real carefully, and I'm going to come back and talk about these plants that we've got growing now that are inside that we're not putting in the garden yet because they can. We need to treat them carefully. The ground is going to be too cold. The transition would not be good. You're going to have to figure out how to keep them good for about another month and 2 weeks. Should you pot them up? I don't think so. I think they're okay. I don't think they're going to get too pot bound. We'll talk about management on that. Carol, was that you that asked me, can you plant a bush or tree? Yes, you can, as long as, Carol, you can plant anything you want now. Not a problem, as long as it's not a tropical, okay? Or a subtropical plant. So if you've got a Chinese hibiscus, I would not plant it now. If you've got a citrus, I would not plant it outside now. I just wouldn't do it. But if you've got an apple, a pear, a plum, a cherry, any good thing, you know, the song, any of those things that are hardy, any hardy bush, any camellias are just fine, azaleas are just fine. They're going to be just fine. In fact, this is a great time. As long as it's not too subtropical or tropical, and just a few plants like that, everything else is going to be just fine. Now, if you've kept the plant inside for too long, for whatever reason, it's going to take a little bit of adjustment bringing it back outside. So put it outside during the day and when the nights are not too cold, because it's going to take a little bit of adjustment. As long as the night temperatures aren't dropping below 32, you can leave it out at night. Give it about a week to adjust and then put it in the ground. But yes, I don't mean to make this hard. You can plant anything this time of year except for just those very few things, coming, John, yes. Let's come back to talk about your situation. I'm sorry we couldn't get to it all. You still there?
Yes, sir.
So you had some trees falling, and they left a lot of sunlight.
Yep.
We got that far before the news interrupted us, and you have some hedges that got beaten down just a little bit as well. Yeah. So tell me where you want to go. Tell me what you're thinking.
Well, now that I have a lot of sunshine, I'd like to resod that area and turn it to grass. And grass can get confusing, centipedes, oyster, bluegrass. I want to know what's best for this foliar area for the grass. And regarding the hedges, I need to find out basically what's there to see if I can replace it. On the hedges, the leaves are oblong and the flowers are purple, my wife's favorite color.
So here's the thing. Are these hedges, let's start with the hedges, are the hedges blooming now?
No, sir.
No. So I wonder what they are. You're going to have to send me a picture of those hedges. Can you send me a photo of the leaves?
I'm sure I can, sure.
Yeah, take a picture of it.
I will. Okay.
Take a picture of it and just send it to me. And I can identify it. If you can take it now, and if you got a picture of the flowers, boy, that really is going to cinch it. But But I can probably tell from the leaves. And then we can figure out how to match that.
Where do I send it?
You send it to this same number that you're calling to. All you got to do is text it.
Okay.
Isn't that
Understood.
Easy? Yeah.
Understood.
Yeah. Let's go to the grasses.
I'll do that.
Say that again.
Let's talk about long grass, maybe.
Yeah. So let's talk about the long grass real quickly. So let me tell you, long grass never makes anybody happy. It never makes anybody happy. No matter what you do, you should not expect it to make you happy. And if you're set with that, then you're okay. Because all long grasses have problems, because the idea of having a lawn in a place like the Deep South is kind of a weird thing. It means I want everything to be exactly the same in the most diverse part of the world, and that means that bugs and diseases and all sorts of terrible things are going to eat you alive in your lawn. But people have had lawns for a long time, as long as they aren't too particular about making it perfect, and as long as they don't expect the lawn to make them happy. So I just want that caveat, because all lawns are going to have problems. No question. No matter what I tell you, you're going to have a problem with that lawn. I will tell you that you can't grow bluegrass here. You should never try bluegrass. Bluegrass won't make you unhappy, because it ain't going to live here. It just won't. And so if you want a grass that stays green during the summer, you've got three choices, basically. And one of them is, if you're going to go get some sod, you can either get centipede, which is your worst choice, just the worst choice. It is just the worst choice. Everything about centipede is wrong. People plant it all the time. It's cheap, and not only will you not be happy with it, you will be aggravated with it most of the time, and you will call me repeatedly saying, "What do I do about centipede?" And I'm going to say, "I don't know," because it's a bad grass for this climate. Does okay in North Alabama, but it's terrible for the Gulf Coast. So that leaves you with St. Augustine as a pretty decent grass, or one of the new zoysias. Some of the wide bladed zoysias. So they go by a lot of different names, and I'll have to remember which one they're selling now most commonly. But the zoysias, the wide bladed zoysias and St. Augustine are generally your best choices. And it doesn't give you a lot of choice, but it's a choice. The zoysia will stand up to foot traffic a little bit better than the St. Augustine will. The St. Augustine will grow faster and repair damage faster than the zoysia. But that's where I would go if I were going to resod. And listen, I would tell you, this is the last. You don't want to resod after February. If you can get that going as quickly as possible, it's a thing to do. Or if you can wait until next fall and just mow what you got, you can resod next fall. And you know what? You may find that just mowing what you got makes you about as happy as you'll ever be with a lawn. And nothing wrong with mowing what you got. So there it is. Yep. Yeah. Do not seek your happiness in a lawn. That's the best advice I can give you. But a lawn is a place to get from one, it's a good way to get from one place to another without running into bushes. You know, that's what a lawn is. And it's a good place to wrestle your brother. You know, if you're still wrestling your brother, I guess I'm too old to wrestle my brother now. But, you know, if you could still wrestle your brother, the lawn would be a good place to do that. So all those things are important, but mostly lawns are about not thinking too much about them and then mowing them at the right height. So have I talked you out? I haven't talked you out of a lawn. I know that, because you're going to need a lawn. You're going to need a little bit of space.
Okay.
But pick one. pick, you know, St. Augustine or the Zoysia, whichever is easiest, and give it a shot. Do you think you can put it in February?
Yes.
Yeah. Let me tell you what to do.
Did you see that picture yet, Bill? I sent you that picture of that hedge.
Yes, I did. It just came in, and I am going to look at it. Ooh, that's a nice one. We'll talk about it as soon as we come back.
Thank you.
If it keeps on raining, love is going to break. If it keeps on raining, love is going to break. And the water gonna come and I have no place to stay. Well, all last night I sat on the lever and moaned. Well, all last night I sat on the lever and moaned. Thinking about my baby and my happy home. If it keeps on raining.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, let's get back to the show. Let's talk about what we need to talk about here this morning. I got a great picture of from John. I'm going to really be able to answer his hedge question, which is really nice. And we're going to talk a little bit about lawns here in the last days. I want to get Alicia says, because I love this question. Is there an ahi that can be stuffed like the jalapeno that has? Because she says jalapeno has a sketchy track record for her growing, and it does. I mean, a lot of those annuum peppers from Mexico have a hard time in one of the wettest climates. You can imagine. It's tough. And so sometimes jalapenos don't do as well. Some people have good success. Some people don't. It all depends on a lot of local conditions. But yes, there's some great ajis out there. And I'll tell you, I've just about quit eating jalapenos. I kind of get stuck with them in the winter. But Ahi Crystal, AJI Crystal, is my favorite and a great substitute. Not a substitute because it tastes different. But it is any place I would use a jalapeno, I've used the Ahi Crystal. It's really fun. It's hot. Ooh, it's hot. But it's not that much hotter than a jalapeno, and it's a quick peck. Like other bacardums, it's a quicker peck, doesn't build up, but a quick, hot peck from Ahi Crystal, and it'd be great for stuffing, but there's a lot of great ahis, a lot of great bacardums that would be good for stuffing. Ahi Santa Cruz, which you're going to have a hard time finding, which I'm trying to grow enough of to distribute the seed, is a great one. But a lot of others, that Ahi Mango is a great one for stuffing, really good. A bunch of them. And you'll some of the Ahi Dulces, are big enough for stuffing, too. They're all really good, really good. Jim in Georgetown, just to get me all riled up, says, well, you didn't mention Bahia. And I says, everybody loves Bahia. And I said, yeah, Bahia happens. Bahia is one of those grasses. John, don't be deceived into planting Bahia. You'll probably have some. John, you still there? John and Foley, you still there?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
I am.
So you're going to have some Bahia come up in this grass area because everybody has it. As I said, Bahia happens. It's a type of grass. Yes, it is a type of grass. It is an annoying type of grass that will drive you crazy, as Jim says, because, you know, you go out and mow it, and your wife says, I thought I told you to mow the yard. And 2 days later, and you say, well, I did. And she said, well, what is all this stuff? And it's all of the little antennas as Jim points out, from all the Bahia, all the seed heads that Bahia puts up, because it's bad to do that. I don't recommend Bahia. It also invades your beds and is a general nuisance. So there's some grasses that will appear out there, but I would say probably the simplest way is for you to start with St. Augustine. Listen, let me tell you something. If I would wait until next fall, that's what I would mow what you've got. You may have some good grass that's going to spread. If you've got St. Augustine, it may spread readily to the other areas, and then you won't have to do a lot of resodding. So kind of wait and just mow it. All you got to do is just mow it and see what happens. And then next fall, about October, November, when we can think about it leisurely, we'll think about what to plant there. And you can send me pictures of the grass you have meanwhile, and we can see what it looks like, and we can see what you like and what you don't like. And then next fall, we can make that decision. That's my suggestion. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. Almost after speaking with you, almost don't care about lawn grass now.
Yeah, good. Good. Because, man,
if I did this, what would be good prep for the lawn grass?
Good prep for the lawn grass?
Yes, sir.
Is that what you said?
Yes, preparation for it, yeah.
Yeah, good. So that's that. Boy, you got the right question. Because if you're going to put down a new lawn, a couple of things you want to do. You want to break up the compacted soil. And that means you can't use a rototiller, because a rototiller will not do it. In fact, it will make the rototilling will make it more compacted, so that there's less oxygen and so the roots can't penetrate. What you need to do is, it's a problem. So almost inevitably, and you need to use, I recommend using a fork. You can use a broad fork, which is a really cool thing. Look up a broad fork, B-R-O-A-D fork, and you might want to get you one, because it can make a lot of difference. But you want to break up that compacted soil without turning it upside down. You don't want to churn it. You want to just crack it. That's the term we use, crack it. And then on top of it, I recommend going with at least a couple of inches of pine bark. It really helps when you've got organic matter is deficient, and just put it right on the top. Don't even dig it in, just leave it right on the top. You might need to put a little lime in with it, and then put your sod right on top of that. That's the way to go for it. Now, that's the simple part. The harder part is if you've got other weeds and other things that may be underneath there, you might have to go in with a Roundup or other things. That's why it's going to be really hard for me to do this for you in February, because you're not going to be able to suppress. If you're going to put down sod, you do need to suppress the weeds underneath there. And February is not a good time to do that, because the herbicides that will work need to be used on green stuff. When it's green in later spring. And so I recommend, in general, let's see what you got. Let's see what you've got. And then let's come back in fall, and you call me back, and we will go through this again at a better time, when it's much easier to do this.
I will do that. Okay? What do you think about those hedges, that picture hedges there, Bill?
So the hedges, great. I love the hedges. The hedges are beautiful. I'm hot. My input's hot. Boy, I gotta quit shouting. Listen, those hedges are neat. That's Elysium. That is an anise. And the flowers are kind of reddish purple, aren't they? And they're really weird looking flowers. The if you crush those leaves, the leaves have an incredible smell, right? Have you crushed the leaves?
I haven't, but I'll do that here in just a minute.
Oh man, it is so much fun. You're going to be, and then don't wipe the oils in your eyes, because it'll sting. It's this really neat, sharp thing that sort of smells like anise, but Florida anise. It's one of the oldest flowering. It's a member of one of the oldest flowering genera in the world. It's a group of plants that are really old. Some of the first flowering plants. They have a really strange flower, but they're native. And you seem to have the native one, Elysium floridanum, Just a beautiful thing. Florida anise is what we're going to call it. I'm pretty sure it's Florida anise. If you have any pictures of flowers, send them to me, and then we can be sure we know what species of anise it is. But it is Florida anise. Florida anise. A-N-I-S-E. And that will allow you to match that hedge. It's a what a great thing to have a hedge out of that. It's a beautiful plant, a really cool plant. One of the ancient plants of the Gulf Coast. Way back in dinosaur times is when Elysium was developing as far as it's that old. It's really, really old in terms of the flowering, groups of flowering plants, older than magnolias, certainly older than daisies and asters and grasses and lots of other things. Really an old, old flowering plant.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, that's a cool plant.
Florida anise. That's very helpful, Bill. Thank you very much. I know what I'm looking at, and I'm just going to be patient, and I'm just going to relax for a while.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And think about all the other wonderful things you can plant with in all that sunlight. I mean, you could plant fruit trees there. You could plant citrus there. You could plant, just think about all the great. You could plant a vegetable garden there. You could plant so many wonderful things.
Good
just
point.
Enough grass
Good
to
point.
Walk
Thank
through
you,
your yard. Yeah.
Walk along the river, sweet love by. You just keep on flowing. And don't worry about where it's going. No, no.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Samson seems sort of sweaty.
Welcome back, Gulf Coast, Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. Lots of good questions. Harris, hold on, because I'm coming right to you. But Wade's been worried about this pine tree, and Wade, you're right to be worried. It's a problem. Wade asked me about it last week. Sent me some pictures this week, and it's just like it's sweating sap. That's the way we would say it. It's resin. My forestry mentors would beat me for saying sap. It is resin. It is a specific chemical that pines put out that actually helps them to fight off infections, among other things. And what you're seeing is, Wade is hoping that the sap is coming from the hits caused by a oak that ran into it, but it's not. Your pine tree is in an active battle. I can see. I can tell. I can guarantee you. Your pine is in an active battle with insects right now because it was stressed by the wind. It was damaged. Probably a lot of that damage is internal. And the insects, the pine beetles that live with this tree are trying to take advantage of the fact that the tree is a little bit stressed. They're building up populations. You can see some of the you can actually see where they're drilling in some cases. But when you see sap like that dripping, it's because you have a beetle. The beetles are trying really hard. Now, the pine may survive. The pine may win this battle because the sap, the resin rolling down the trunk is the pine trying to flush those beetles out. And we've had a good winter. It's not too dry. The tree should have good energy to deal with it. And at this point, the attacks from the insects have probably subsided a little bit. But it is worth watching. But make no doubt about it. You have the tree is actively fighting off that beetle infestation. It's not easy to fix that. But, if you want to call, you can at this stage and get somebody to look at it. I think until you start seeing red flagging, until you start seeing some branches turning red, I don't think there's really much to worry about. And I personally would not intervene at this stage. But you can certainly call an arborist because the tree is in an active battle. active battle right now. David Hubble says he's got some oranges, and he hadn't had a chance to pick them. And how long, David, as long as you like. It's amazing because, you know, for most of those navel oranges, a lot of oranges, the one exception would be blood orange and maybe the Hamlin oranges. But most of the navel and Washington oranges really aren't, don't fully develop until February, March, April. And they'll be good on the tree until at least May. So don't worry. You got plenty of time. They'll still be good. Nothing's going to deteriorate. They don't often develop their best qualities until March or April anyway. So there it is. You got plenty of time. Harris, you have been very patient. Are you still there?
Hey, Bill. Still here, man. How are you this morning?
Good, good. Good to hear from you. So what's up?
I am looking at a mason jar with about, oh, I don't know, a dozen cuttings from my parents' fig tree. What do I need to
yep.
do with these?
Well, so when did you take those cuttings? Did they have leaves on them?
They were cut this week.
Yeah. So we're going to call those hardwood cuttings. You know, one of the things you can do, I think it'll still work, is find a leaf pile. Find a leaf pile in your side yard. You got some leaves that are kind of rotted up pretty good.
You better believe it.
Yeah. So go out, find a leaf pile, and bury those. Just bury them in there. You can leave the tips sticking out if you want or not. Doesn't matter. Just bury them in there, and just let them sit there for a month or two. Take a look at them again in late March or early April, and they should have roots on them. I feel like I ought to make it more complicated, but there it is.
Glad to hear it.
That's figs for you. So they don't actually need any sunlight because they don't have any leaves on. It doesn't really matter. So you just bury the whole hardwood cuttings. They will root out along the nodes. As long as they haven't dried out too much, they should do just fine. And the best way I found to do it is to put them in a pile of moldering leaves that's begun to molder down, and they will root out in that really easily. And then when they've got some roots on it, you know, there'll be some kind of dirt sticking to it. You can just pull them out and then go plant them.
All right. So just lay them down flat in the leaf.
That's right. That's right. It'll work just fine that way.
All right. That's fantastic. I appreciate it.
All right. All right, Harris. Let us know how it goes. Thanks for calling. Nancy, you know, Nancy had the same thought that I did, but Nancy, tell me what you're thinking here.
Well, I just wanted to relay my experience, and that's about it. And
yep.
I've listened to your program a long time. I love it, and I just want to say that. I was out walking my dog, and
yep.
she was doing her business, and all of a sudden I felt this. She pulled me into the bush.
Yeah.
And I felt this zap on my arm. And I thought, well, that was weird. And I hope it wasn't a wasp because I'm definitely allergic to them. And I didn't have my EpiPen with me or anything. And so I stepped back and I thought, what the heck was that? You know, was there a thorn on this bush or what is it?
Yeah.
And when I looked closer and I got really close into the bush, it was a saddleback caterpillar.
Now, Nancy, tell everybody what that saddleback caterpillar looked like.
Well, if you look them up online, they're like a lime green color, and it's been a while since I've thought about it, so it might not be as accurate here, but it's lime green, and it looks like he has a saddle on his back.
It does, and it's yellow. It's
kind of like
lime
a
green
whitish kind of color, I
right?
think. I can't remember. Yeah.
Yep. Yep, that's right. You got it. So it's lime green base with a kind of a white, a strong white line around the edge of the saddle, and the top of the saddle's brown. And then he's got these little bitty, he's got these little spikes all over him, like little warts with spikes coming out of them. And
yep.
really cool, one just fantastically cool looking creature. Now, and yeah, and what time of year was this?
You know, I'm trying to remember, but I think it was around March, February or March, something around then, because for me to be able to see him really surprised me. There were a couple leaves left on this bush, but nothing was that lime green, or else I would have just kept on going and assumed it was a wasp and got my EpiPen.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So let me tell you, I've been one of my, I just remember this vividly. I was running through the Delta near the, there's this big old city in the middle of the Delta. Nobody seems to really realize it, but it's a huge city, probably one of the biggest cities in North America in 1250 AD, in the middle of the Mobile Tensaw Delta. And it's just the remains. And I was running up a hillside, and there were some, there were bushes. I'm not sure. I can't remember exactly what they were. But I ran through them, and just suddenly it was like somebody was shooting at me. Everywhere I stepped, boom, boom, boom. And it was full of those saddleback caterpillars. And they can be, you know, they can surprise you. And they do sting. I don't know if many people have an allergic reaction to them, but it's good to have an EpiPen around them. So one of the things I thought about when we had our caller earlier and Ted was trying to get us to identify weeds and he said something stung him, maybe this prompted you, I'm thinking, could it be a saddleback? And it could have been a saddleback caterpillar that he didn't notice, though I don't see them as much in winter. But it's interesting that you saw them in March, which seems to be a little bit earlier, and maybe in some winters they overwinter. So Ted's problem could be a saddleback caterpillar.
It really could be. The funny thing is I did have an EpiPen, but I didn't know if I should use it for a caterpillar, so I took him to the ER with me.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
I took the EpiPen and the caterpillar in a box, you know, and everybody was really wondering what's in the box. You know, it was kind of created a stir. So that was my 5 minutes of fame. But luckily, I had no reaction. So I was really pleased I didn't have to use my EpiPen.
Yeah, yeah, those saddlebacks are wild, aren't they? They're really, they're neat, they're beautiful, they're incredibly beautiful. And weirdly beautiful, but you know, they're beautiful because it's a warning. It says, don't you get near me, don't you get too close, and it's a beautiful warning, but it is, they will flat sting you.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, just food for thought for your friend who called and I thought, well, maybe you just never know.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was wondering. And it's interesting to know. I rarely see them in winter, but there you go. These mild winters we're having, they may be persisting. So there it is.
Yeah, watch out for the bushes.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Yeah, thank you. That was good. And you know, I wanted to say it, but I didn't say it out loud because I thought, you know, I don't know. But Nancy said it for us, and it could be a saddleback. I'm not so sure. Gosh, we got a lot of callers. How long will Myers Lemons stay on there? You know, Myers Lemons don't stay on as long. I mean, they have a good one, and they start getting really sweet. I don't know the answer to that as well. I think they're probably going to be. I think by March, I think the Myers Lemons are going to starting to get sweet, more sweeter. But I would say you can easily pick the Myers Lemons through winter. You know, if the Myers Lemons produce, if they could be producing all year long, they'd be good to eat anytime they're immature. It's just that after a while they start to get really mature and they really begin to get more sweet. Because they're half orange, you know. They get more sweet than they are tart, which is okay, but it kind of lacks something after a while. But I'd say they'll probably hang on through February and March. It's too cool for them to get a lot more mature. I think they'll be fine. I think you'll be fine with them. Where do I go next? I go to the music, and then we have just a brief time. I'm going to try to get to a lot of these... a lot of these calls and questions. When we come back.
Is not an iris or a wild rose, but a little...
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Boy, we got the rain thing going today, don't we, on the music? I don't know how we got so much rain music going on, but we do. Tibuchina. Cade, you hearing me? Tibuchina. Cade, I think, has tried to send me this picture before, and it didn't work. He wanted to know what this beautiful purple-flowered thing is that's blooming right now with the leaves that have those parallel veins. See how the veins are kind of parallel, weirdly parallel? It's a neat, it's a member of the same family as... you can tell it's closely related to things like our meadow beauties, deer grasses, Tibuchina, and that's the that's the common name. Sorry, yeah, I knew you were going to ask me how do you spell it. Here it goes. You ready? Tibuchina, Tibuchina. God, I feel like I'm on a spelling bee or something on this show. You think I can keep up with all these spellings? I try. Tibuchina. Cool thing. How long will Pongkan oranges? I can tell you about Pongkan. Pongkan is a type of Satsuma, kind of a Satsuma relative, more tropical. They hold a lot longer than Satsumas. Probably about as long as oranges. I can tell you that I've eaten good Pongkans, I can tell you personally, well into the 1st of March. After the 1st of March, I don't think so. I think probably not so good, but they'll hold on for a good while. I don't think they'll hold well through the heat. Probably not as well as most oranges will, and I wouldn't try that with them. So, Jim in Georgetown saying easy way to propagate figs. You know, I think there's an even easier way, but if you do it, like I said, just laying them in there with a hardwood cutting, laying them in those leaf mold, when the roots develop, just, you can put them in the pot, you can put them in the ground. I mean, they're figs. They're tough. You might put them in pots just to give it a little bit of a transition. Ooh, let's see. How long will we got to that one. Wayne, did I get to you? Wayne, this was the morning for Morella cerifera, wax myrtle. That little thing you dug out of the woods is a wax myrtle. It's a wax myrtle. Twice we've talked about wax myrtles today. Big deal. Hey, Bill, I don't know if we're going to have time to talk about fescue this morning, but let's give it a shot. You tell me what you think.
All right. Well, one of the things they did like about California is, especially on hillsides, they used to hydroseed in this. A tall red fescue was a real tall, wavy grass, beautiful when the wind would blow or the breeze. It would look like a horse's mane and would stay green, little maintenance, not a lot of water. You think it'd do well here in Alabama?
Yeah, not in Mobile, no. So okay. let me put it to you. Let me also tell you, the one thing you didn't mention in California is what happens to fescue in the middle of summer. What does fescue in California look like in July?
Well, it's it would go pretty dormant. Yeah, it
yeah.
would.
And it's going to do the same thing here. So if you don't mind a grass that goes dormant in April and looks brown in May, June, July, August, and September, then you're okay. You'll have a brown lawn through the summer months. Most people don't like that. I actually think that's not a bad thing, but let me tell you the other thing about fescue. Fescue is toxic. Fescue is toxic to wildlife. It's toxic to birds. It's toxic to deer. It's toxic to rabbits. It is one of the worst things in a lot of places in Alabama. Pastures are full of fescue, and it's one of the reasons we lost quail. So I don't recommend fescue. You'll just have to learn to live with me on this. I hate fescue. I hate what fescue has done to Alabama and in the pastures where it grows, because it's grown as a winter grass to feed cattle. It's toxic to horses, so horses abort their foals because they're on it. It was where I really learned to hate it. It causes about $500 million a year in losses to the cattle industry in the Southeast every year. It's wild. We could do a whole show on fescue, but then I'd drive everybody crazy because all I'd say is how bad it is. So, but here's the thing. The good thing for you is you don't even need to think about it for Mobile because it's not going to do well here, and you'll have to go with 6 months with nothing. If you wanted a brown lawn in summer, I would go with winter rye, which is better, and you get this beautiful winter, you know, for 6 months you get a beautiful green lawn. It'll just be during the cool months, and that may be the way you do it. So I'd go with winter rye rather than fescue. The fescue would cause a lot of problems that the winter rye wouldn't, including some maintenance issues. So yeah,
I'm probably like everybody else here in Mobile. My green lawn is mostly a combination of different weeds in the summer. So there you go.
Yeah, and that's okay. What's wrong with that? I mean, you know, as long as you can wrestle your brother on it, you're okay. And and that's it. So, and as long as you can walk from one place to another, and as long as it stays green. But one of the things you can do is overseed that with winter rye in winter, and it'll be okay. And you'll get a nice consistent green coat in winter, and then you'll have whatever's there in summer. And you know, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, and I understand that winter rye sends down a tremendous root system that eventually dies and is good for soil.
That's right. And it does help. It does help. But the fact that you've got lots of weeds in your lawn is already helping your lawn. It will be better for your lawn than having just one of those cultivated grasses. So you're headed in the right direction. Just leave the fescue be,
well,
as we
you.
Like to say. All right, Bill. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Oh, man, do we have any time for Lane? I don't think we do. Lane, can you call me back next week? Because for some reason we got all excited. David, my good friend David Bracken. David, you got some great questions. And I'm gonna think on them and come back on it next week. Boy, did we talk about a lot of different things today. I hope everybody got what they needed out of the show. Jerry wanted to know what to do about a no-till food plot on new ground. Boy, I could do a whole show on that, but it's pretty simple. Jerry, can you wait until next week? And I'm just going to tell you, it's pretty good. It's pretty easy, and we're going to deal with that when we come back next week. Lane wanted to know about follow-up on cuttings on Myers Lemon. We're going to deal with that next week. But, man, look for the birds. Look for the birds, folks. Let's look for them. 30% loss of birds in North America. How did we do that? How did we do that? It's a good question. We'll be back next week.
Rain is falling through the mist of sorrow that surrounded me. The sun